20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope you are enjoying your Friday. Hope this kicks off an epic weekend for you. Got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be going over the biggest winners of the Packers offseason. That can be defined in a variety of different ways, and we're going to do that in just a moment. But before we get there, a couple things really quick. The first thing I want to do today is just remind you, if you're watching this on YouTube, just know we have a full dedicated Pack-A-Day podcast audio channel that, besides my episode you're getting every single day, we have a full team of 20-plus people. People like Dusty Evely and Janelle Mackey and Sarah Kelleher, and I could go on and on, Mark Eckel, just an unbelievable team of people that we've got that are putting out podcasts every single day for you on the audio channel. So if you haven't checked that out yet, I highly recommend it. You get more than just my episodes. You get a brand new episode from our team of amazing podcasters every single day. We've had some awesome reviews lately. Dad Support gave it a 5-star review, said the show always does great work, but the prospect deep dives are some of my favorite Packers content around. Dad Support, appreciate that. Mac MH said it's terrific. Go Pack Go, I hate the Bears, just said good Packers update podcast. All of these 5-star reviews over on our audio channel. So make sure that you are checking those out as well. And I appreciate the reviews. If you haven't had the opportunity yet to go leave a review or put those 5-star reviews in, those help the channel a ton and we would appreciate it. But just check out the audio channel if you have not done so already, assuming you're listening to this or watching it on YouTube. Also want to shout out our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Patrick Handel, Mark W., and Say Cheese. Appreciate you guys signing up. And just to kind of go back for a moment to the audio channel, I just want to say too, I never get to do this enough. I cannot thank all of the incredible people that we have on our audio channel, as well as here on the video, people that come on regularly, like Justice Mosqueda, obviously what Ross Uglum did during the daily draft, and Camille Davis, which he does during the season, and Tyler behind the scenes doing the thumbnails and all the social media and things like that. Just the entire team of people that we have working on Pack-A-Day, as awesome as they are at their jobs, they are even better people. And I don't get to say it enough. I should say it a whole heck of a lot more, but I'm so appreciative of everyone that we have working on the team, everyone that's ever worked with the Pack-A-Day podcast. So I want to shout out all of those people as well. All right, on to today's show. Let's start with the defensive coaches press conferences from Thursday. No major takeaways here. The two biggest ones were from Derek Ansley, the defensive backs coach. The first thing he said was about Kalen King. He said, quote, "I don't want to speak too soon, knock on wood, but he's looking really good out there," unquote. And then the other thing he said is that he's playing both inside and outside. Primarily last year, he was used as an inside slot corner. I'm glad to hear that he's putting some work in on the outside as well, because that inside slot corner sort of taken already, right? Like Nate Hobbs can play in there. Javon Bullard can play in there. Keyshawn Nixon can play in there. There's just not a ton of opportunity at that spot at the moment. So I love the fact that he's getting some time on the outside as well, but great to hear that he's looking really good, which is again, quote from Derek Ansley. The other thing from Derek Ansley, he said, and was asked about Jaire Alexander, just said, quote, "We have contact every morning." So Derek Ansley, Jaire Alexander, still in constant communication. Do with that what you will. I have no idea. I'm so at a loss for this entire topic of conversation. It has been wild and it remains wild. And I have still 0.0% idea. Also, I have 0.1% idea at this point in time where this thing is going to go. That's my percentage on that. But those were the two main quotes from the defensive coaches on Thursday. I just want to spend a really quick second on this, and we'll get to the offseason winners in just a moment. The talk of the draft lottery. I did a little bit of an update on this on the Q&A after the schedule release when somebody asked about it, but I just want to put this out there as well. All right, draft lottery. First thing I'll say is that I think this is a potential for a very fun draft lottery event. It would be must-watch TV, right? You've got 18 teams, 14 make the playoffs, 18 don't, 18 teams that are vying for early draft picks. It has the opportunity to be pretty freaking epic. That's awesome in and of itself. All right, let's just put that to the side for a moment. What's the reason that you would want a draft lottery? What is the problem that you're trying to solve by putting a draft lottery in place? The problem would be tanking, that you're trying to make it so that teams are not tanking and that they have less incentive to be the worst team with the worst record so that they get rewarded with a better draft pick. The first thing I'll say is I don't think that that's currently an issue in the NFL. There are some teams that are maybe scaling back some of the players that they're playing and things like that. But we've seen some of these teams really cost themselves some significant draft capital by winning games later in the season. You know, these coaches and these players are still doing everything they can to win in season. I don't see there really being a tanking issue at the moment. So you're looking for a solution to a problem that as of right now does not exist. And as fun as the potential lottery event, I think personally would be, that's not the reason for doing it. You don't do it for more rating. Now, the NFL might, because it's the NFL, but you don't do it for ratings. You don't do it for an event. You don't do it. You do it because you're trying to figure out a way to solve a problem or because there is some actual need for it. And right now in the current NFL, I don't think there's a need for it. That being said, I do think the event would be very fun. I do think it would be awesome to watch an NFL draft lottery. I also don't think it's as big of a deal as people are making it out to be. If this was something where we had the NFL draft down to a science, and every year the person taken first overall was like a Peyton Manning, right? Where it's just like clearly and obviously the best player. Peyton Manning's the last number one pick that's really completely like changed their franchise around and gone on to win Super Bowls and has clearly been like the guy. Like, you can make the argument for Joe Burrow that was the right pick, number one overall. You can actually make like an argument for Carson Palmer. Even Myles Garrett, who went one overall, that was the Patrick Mahomes draft. So even that one didn't get right. And if you look at all the top quarterbacks right now, Lamar Jackson, 32nd overall, Patrick Mahomes, there's quarterbacks taken before him. Josh Allen, two or three quarterbacks taken before him. So this is not a situation where we've got this thing down to an exact science where it is so valuable, like only the number one pick, where even in like the NBA, where Victor Wembanyama, LeBron James, like these players you kind of know or have a little bit better of a feel for, that they're going to be unbelievable players. In the NFL, it's not down to that exact of a science. You could easily end up with the fourth pick instead of the first and end up with the much better player overall. That's just how this stuff goes. So I actually don't think it's as big of an issue as people are making it out to be, or that it's going to ruin parity. And like, I just don't see it that way at all. And the last thing I'll just say about this really quick, I do believe that this would actually be a really sound advantage for Green Bay. Now, I care about the game and the NFL more than that, than to just do something for Green Bay's sake. But Green Bay has a really strong foundation of a franchise, and it would take something pretty cataclysmic or catastrophic for them to be number one or number two or number three overall pick worthy. In fact, it has not happened since I've started watching football, which is, it's been a hot second now. The only time that they've picked in the top five in basically my entire time watching football, it was AJ Hawk at pick five. And that was the fifth pick of the top five, right? They've never picked inside the top five. Green Bay has that strong foundation that even if you get Brett Hundley seasons, or even when Jordan Love is out for a few games last year, Malik Willis is coming in and still winning all the games. Like, they're just usually, knock on wood, not in that position to be in a top three, top four, top five overall pick scenario very often. And I don't see that being the case because of the foundation that they've built for themselves. So from a pure Packers standpoint, you can make a pretty strong argument that it is a better scenario, because while they may not have that bottom five record, they will have a 6-11, 7-10 record here or there, have a record of, you know, maybe 8-9-8, but don't make the playoffs. That could happen. And maybe you get a Dallas Mavericks scenario where Green Bay has a 1.8% chance of winning the draft lottery, and now they move up to pick one instead of being at pick 16 or whatever. So I'm not saying I'm for it. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I'm just saying I'm a little bit more open to it at minimum. And if you told me tomorrow that the NFL proposed and approved a draft lottery for next year, I would probably be totally fine with it / cool with it. And I actually think it's a very exciting event. And I do think that it's actually beneficial for Green Bay. So just my two cents on it. My overarching, I want to say one more time, is I would not change it. That's my final answer. It's not broke. Don't fix it. Keep it as is. You don't need to change anything. There's not a good reason to change it. All right. So why are we messing with anything at this point? That's my final answer. I'm just saying, if they did change it, if they did move to a draft lottery, I would be fine with it, especially from a Packers standpoint, where I actually think it could potentially be beneficial for Green Bay. All right. Enough about that. It's a fun conversation, but one that we don't need to dabble into any more than that, because right now there's no real sign of it. It was just a Mike Greenberg, sort of comment that they should do it, which is funny because everyone's complaining about it in the NBA. So now is probably the last time to have the conversation of like, oh, the NFL should do it. Why? Because everyone is hating it right now from an NBA standpoint. Maybe wait till it actually has a good result and then maybe have that conversation. All right, I digress. Let's get to the Packers' biggest offseason winners. I'm going to start with an honorable mention and then we'll kind of go through our list. My honorable mention is just TJ Slayton. Obviously not a Packer anymore, but I had no idea how this defensive tackle market was going to go because it was a pretty robust free agent market and then a massive draft class of defensive tackles. And again, going back to Slayton, I was kind of expecting for him like a 1 year, $4 to $5 million deal. And he got 2 years, $14 million. Like even if it's an out after year one where you can get out of it, you still end up paying him over like at least around $7.5 million. I thought he did really well in the open market. So while I'm sure maybe he would have liked to have stayed in Green Bay, or maybe he wouldn't have, I don't know, but he didn't get that contract in Green Bay, I still think he got really great value for himself on the open market by getting 2 years, $14 million overall. So kudos to TJ Slayton, no longer a Packer, but that was a very good offseason for him, at least from a financial standpoint. Let's get to actual players that are on this Packers team now. And let's go with number one, and that's Matt LaFleur. I think this was a huge win of an offseason for Matt LaFleur for a variety of different reasons. The biggest one is he was, at least there was the possibility. I don't know if he was close, but there was the possibility that he legitimately could have lost Jeff Hafley to a head coaching job. Now, Hafley got one or two head coaching opportunities or interviews. It never really felt like Hafley was in the running in any sort of significant way for one, but it wouldn't have been stunning either if Hafley went and just crushed an interview and some team would have went in that direction. Again, never really expected it, but I'll just say this. There may be some teams that end up regretting that down the line that they didn't take Hafley a little bit more seriously, but it would have been, I think, really a huge bummer had Jeff Hafley not been back. There's maybe a world in which if he had done it soon enough that you could have got Robert Saleh as the defensive coordinator and it probably would have been fine, or done it before Anthony Campanelli left for Jacksonville's defensive coordinator position and promoted him. And there's other opportunities or options there as well. But I think the best option and opportunity was Jeff Hafley staying in Green Bay. And that I think is a huge win for Matt. All right. So I'm going to need to legitimately try and temper my excitement here for just a moment, because I found a new app that has not only helped me win, but has enhanced my enjoyment of playoff hockey and playoff basketball. And it could not have come at a better time. Recently, I found the Hall of Fame app. And let me just tell you, this app is not just for fun and games, although it's great for that too. This thing is a full-fledged analytics engine that gives you access to advanced stats, historical data, and powerful tools to help you bet smarter. But what I love about this app is that it's built for the everyday sports fan and it's insanely simple to use. And with a 4.9 rating in the App Store and over 6,000 five-star reviews, it's safe to say that the HOF app has already helped a ton of people bet smarter. Here's the best part. Our listeners at Packaday get a free 7-day trial and 50% off their first month. Just download the HOF app and use code Packaday at checkout. Hall of Fame isn't just about parlays. It's built for player props, game lines, totals, and more. It gives you the tools you need to break down trends, spot value, and make smarter bets. And now for a limited time only, get a 7-day free trial and 50% off your first month when you use code Packaday at checkout. That's the Hall of Fame app on iOS or Android using code Packaday and you're all set. So what are you waiting for? Make sure you're betting smarter with the Hall of Fame app. Rich Bisaccia, also back. Now, from a special teams coordinator standpoint, there's an argument to be made as to whether or not Green Bay should have done that extension and things like that. But clearly Matt wanted him back, trusts him in that special teams role. But more importantly, I think Bisaccia's role as an assistant head coach is really important on this team as well. And maybe even more important than that, you don't have to go special teams coordinator shopping again and start another sort of project and rebuild on that special teams. I think that was ultimately a win for him as well. Adam Stenovich is back. That's another one where he got multiple head coaching interviews. And I'll say it just like Halfley, never really felt like it was anything close to happening. But when you get multiple head coach interviews, you're never quite sure. And that could have been one where he had to replace his offensive coordinator. And maybe he just would have went with Luke Getsy in that situation and had him take that spot. But either way, you get to keep Steno and you bring Luke Getsy back into the fold. That's another positive for Matt, is he does, you know, he does get Luke Getsy back. Plus, you get a bunch of weapons on offense. Your biggest free agent signing is Aaron Banks. And your first three draft picks are all on the offensive side of the ball. Plus, you get Mecole Hardman. Like, there was significant investments made on the offense that should help his offense run more fluidly and be more explosive. You had no major free agent losses on offense. And while there's been a little bit of drama surrounding Elgton Jenkins and certainly Jaire Alexander, I would label everything this offseason so far as very manageable drama. Now, maybe the Elgton thing takes a turn and we still don't exactly know what's going to go on or happen with Jaire Alexander, but I would say it's all been manageable drama so far. So the coaching staff is intact. You get a bunch of weapons on offense. It's primarily a healthy offense with Luke Musgrave coming back, Marshawn Lloyd coming back, Jordan being healthy. Yes, you have Christian Watson hurt, but I'd say overall, this has been a big win this offseason for Matt LaFleur. And then that leads us right into number two, which is Jordan Love. Again, we talk about the huge additions on offense. You get two new wide receivers in Matthew Golden and Savion Williams. You get multiple new offensive linemen with Aaron Banks and Anthony Belton and John Williams to some extent as well. So they add a bunch of pieces there. Mecole Hardman also. You get a huge, in my opinion, upgrade at center going from Josh Myers to Elgton Jenkins. That is a massive upgrade, plus just Banks filling in that left guard spot vacated by Elgton, I think is going to be pretty close to maybe not quite status quo. I think Elton's probably a little bit better, but I think Banks is going to fill that role really well. You have a healthy Luke Musgrave, a healthy Marshawn Lloyd, no contract negotiations to go through this offseason, a healthy Jordan Love. And while he did lose Tom Clements, his quarterback's coach, which I think does sting a little bit, I do think getting Sean Mannion into that role is going to be a win. And you get Luke Getsy back, who has worked with Jordan in the past, which I think is also a win. So I think this was a very positive and winning offseason for Jordan Love as well. Next is Aaron Banks. Not anything too deep to dig into on this one. He just got paid in a pretty significant way by a very good team that's competitive. And let me just start by saying, you never know how these things are going to go as a free agent. Mekhi Becton, right? What did he get, like 2 years, 20, I want to say, for Mekhi Becton on the open market as a guard who had a really great season in Philadelphia a season ago? You know, he 2 years, $20 million with the Chargers. So you never quite know. Like, if you would have told me going into this thing that Aaron Banks got like 2 years, 20, I'd be like, yeah, I could see that. It wouldn't have shocked me. Banks got 4 years, $77 million. Mekhi Becton, the starting right guard for the Philadelphia Eagles last year, their Super Bowl team, goes 2 years, 20. Aaron Banks, 4 years, 77, a significant contract. And, you know, for Banks, again, you never quite know how free agency is going to go when you're a player in your first free agency foray. And this, to me, was a huge, huge win for Aaron Banks for a variety of different reasons, not just the contract, but also gets the undisputed starting left guard spot in Green Bay, gets to stay at left guard, gets to go to a good team, winning situation, good offensive line coaches. And this is a pretty big win for Aaron Banks. Number four, and again, these aren't, and I'm just kind of going offense to defense and so on and so forth. I'm not actually ranking these in any way. Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson. Now, I'm not saying that they're in like ideal 1A perfect spots here. You still have Josh Jacobs as your number one running back. Marshawn Lloyd's not going anywhere as a third round pick from a season ago. But there's a lot of different things that could have happened this offseason. They were never going to probably go free agent shopping at the position, but you'd never quite know if like just a running back is going to fall to Green Bay that they love and they take an additional running back in the draft. And let's just say like fifth round, they get to their spot in the draft and the best BPA, best player available, was a running back. Now you've got another really, you know, probably talented back that they used a fifth round pick on to come in and compete in this room as well. Thankfully for Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson, that did not happen. And the only two players that they brought in were undrafted free agents. Now, I really like both running backs as undrafted free agents, but it does lessen the competition a little bit for Brooks and Wilson. They're still going to have to compete between each other, and there's a possibility they only keep one of those guys. And you know, there's still a possibility they keep both as well, but it would have complicated things a lot more if Green Bay drafted a running back at any point in the draft. They did not, and I think it sets Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson up to battle it out for that number three spot, and even the other one still has a chance to make it as a number four. Very similar conversation at number five for Ben Sims and John Fitzpatrick. First of all, John Fitzpatrick getting a little bit of signing bonus money. I think that's actually a win for him as well, but no tight ends taken in the draft and no tight ends added in free agency. In fact, Tyler Davis is gone, but you're competing with Johnny Lumpkin and Messiah Swinson for that number three tight end spot. Same thing here. They're going to have to battle against each other. This is a heavyweight fight between Ben Sims and John Fitzpatrick, but there easily could have been a world in which at some point in the draft, Green Bay took another tight end. And that player, if they were taken rounds like four through six, probably would have been the leader in the clubhouse to get that number three tight end spot just based on draft positioning alone. But Green Bay did not go in that direction. They did not add a tight end via the draft. Didn't even add one in undrafted free agency. So I think that is a huge win for both Sims and Fitzpatrick. Whereas of right now, unless Lumpkin or Swinson get themselves in that conversation, this should be a one-on-one battle between Sims and Fitzpatrick. And it could have been just a losing battle had they taken a tight end in like the third or fourth round. That would have just been probably game over. I don't think either of those guys make that 53 barring a injury to one of the top three tight ends on the roster in that scenario. Number six, moving over to special teams, is Rich Bisaccia. This one's pretty self-explanatory. There were a lot of people that were calling for Rich Bisaccia to be fired. I think a lot of people, probably even myself included, where if Green Bay did move on from Rich Bisaccia, like at minimum, I wouldn't have been shocked. I wouldn't have been like, oh my God, I can't believe they let... And I would have been like, I get it. Like, he hasn't done quite a good enough job in special teams. I was not calling for it. It wasn't something that I'm like, oh, they got to get rid of this guy. But I wouldn't have been like stunned by it. And instead of having to go get a new special teams coordinator, instead of firing Rich Bisaccia or letting him retire or walk in, you know, whatever, like go, we'll let him walk to another team, however it would have happened, he comes back with an extension. He gets a legitimate extension on top of his current contract. So this is a special teams coordinator, an assistant head coach that some people were saying, hey, let's get rid of this guy. And Green Bay's like, no, we're actually going to give him more money and give him an extension. We'll see if that works out or not. But for Rich Bisaccia, that is a hell of a win going from, you know, and I'm sure he probably didn't feel the quote unquote hot seat. I'm sure he doesn't care what people are saying online or whatever, but to go from somebody that people are literally saying, fire this guy, to Green Bay saying, no, actually, we're going to extend him. That's a pretty big win in my book for Rich Bisaccia this offseason. I loved how self-reflective he was in his press conference as well, basically saying he needs to do better. I think this is a coach that adds a ton of value to this coaching staff overall. I do think there's some stuff special teams wise they need to do better, and I think he's going to work hard at that this year. But overall, definitely a winning offseason for Rich Bisaccia, all things considered. Number seven is LVN. I think the biggest thing here, and actually we're just going to combine this with Devontae Wyatt as well. Those two are number seven and eight on my list. The biggest thing I can say is DeMarcus Covington. They moved on from their former defensive line coach, and they bring in a new defensive line coach that hopefully can unlock some of these young defensive linemen and maybe primarily Devontae Wyatt and LVN. Let's start with LVN a little bit here. No significant pass rusher added. Yes, they added pass rushers or edge players in the fourth or fifth rounds, but it wouldn't have been like massively stunning if Shamar Stewart or Mykel Williams or one of those guys fell to them in the draft, that they could have taken a big time defensive end in the draft. And if they did that, that certainly, you know, could cut into LVN's playing time or even just, you know, opportunities to get out there on obvious passing downs that could have affected him. Instead, they wait till the fourth and fifth rounds. I don't think that's going to affect LVN in any sort of significant way. And I think LVN has everything in front of him to be the number two edge opposite Rashawn Gary. He's going to have to earn it and have a lot of opportunities to rush the passer on some key passing downs. So I think that's a win for him. The DeMarcus Covington thing is a win, and just his positioning on this team where everyone's saying they're expecting a breakout. We'll see if he can do it, but he is still very much set up for success right now in Green Bay. With Devontae Wyatt, same thing. Not only do you get DeMarcus Covington, but they pick up his fifth-year option. And then sort of similar to what we talked about with Shamar Stewart and Mykel Williams, there were a variety of defensive tackles that Green Bay brought in on top 30 visits that were like first round caliber players. Sanders in the second round would have been another one. It would not have been stunning at any point if Green Bay spent a top 100 pick on a true three technique. Like that could have happened based on the guys they brought in and had some level of interest in. And that could have cut into Devontae Wyatt's playing time and or maybe made it that they wouldn't have picked up his fifth year option. So the fact that he gets his fifth year option picked up, that he is the undisputed leader in the three technique position and should get more playing time this year, I think that's a win for Devontae Wyatt as well. I'm going to stick on the defensive line and I'm going to say Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden. So in that defensive tackle room, TJ Slayton is gone, as we mentioned. Only Warren Brinson and Nazir Stackhouse really added to the team. That is a sixth round pick and an undrafted free agent. And neither of them are three techniques. We heard how bullish that Jeff Hafley was on his interior defensive line group, specifically mentioning Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Colby Wooden, and Carl Brooks. If they would have gone and got some early defensive tackles in this draft, you could have been talking about like at least Wooden maybe being gone. I still think Wooden's going to have to earn his job, but even Carl Brooks could have been in a little bit more danger, to be honest. But instead, they get more of a, you know, somewhere in between a three and a one technique in Warren Brinson. I think you could do a little bit of both, but probably not a true three technique like Wooden or Carl Brooks were. And certainly Nazir Stackhouse is not that either. So both are going to have to work hard and still earn their spots. But I think this has been a pretty positive offseason for both Brooks and Wooden, and they could have had a lot more competition and they just didn't get it, which is a very nice sign for both of those guys. Number 10 is Isaiah McDuffie, re-signed, didn't know if he was going to be back, and Green Bay kind of prioritized him, was one of the first guys that got back. 2-year, $8 million deal, which I think is a really nice deal for Isaiah McDuffie. Stays with Jeff Hafley, gets to stay in Green Bay, should be probably the leader in the clubhouse for that number three linebacker spot. He's going to have to compete with the rest of the players in that group, including Tyron Hopper. But if I had to guess right now, I'd say he's probably going to be the starter there. And again, just gets to continue to play with Jeff Hafley. And I think probably feel very comfortable in this defense because he's, you know, played it in college as well. So I think this has been a very nice offseason for McDuffie, where again, you just didn't know it was going to happen. If you would have told me that McDuffie left Green Bay and got like a 1-year, $2 million deal, I probably would have been like, yeah, that sounds about right. But he gets 2 years, eight to stay in Green Bay. I like that deal overall for Green Bay, but it's a really great deal for Isaiah McDuffie. Number 11 is Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, and Micah Robinson. For these three players, first of all, Robinson gets drafted. He wasn't even listed on the 700 something, you know, consensus big board. He actually gets drafted in the seventh round, but he also goes to about the perfect scenario. Same thing for Kalen King and Kamal Haddon. Like those guys are right now, depending on what happens with Jair, if Jair is gone, you're looking at Hobbs, Nixon, Valentine, and then these guys, Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, and Micah Robinson as potentially your 4, 5, and 6. I don't know any other team where those three players are potentially going to be competing for the 4th, 5th, and 6th spots respectively. Green Bay is a little bit weak in the depth department. Now, if they get Jair back, that certainly changes the calculus quite a bit. But even then, three of these guys will be battling for those final two spots in the corner room, assuming they keep six. So these are ones that potentially really benefit from Green Bay not doing quite as much in free agency or the draft at corner. I mean, obviously, they went and got Nate Hobbs, and we're talking about Micah Robinson, who was a 7th-round pick. But overall, Robinson, Haddon, and King are in unbelievable positions where they legitimately have the opportunity to earn spots, not only on this team, but potential getting some playing time as like a number 4 corner. You can get out there. So I think that makes it really intriguing and is certainly a win for all three of those players. And last but not least is Keyshawn Nixon and Nate Hobbs. To me, these are two players, you know, Nate Hobbs, again, gets the big money in free agency. He's going to probably be a legitimate player, regardless of whether or not Jair is back. If Jair is not back, I expect to see a little bit more Hobbs on the outside. Jair is back, I'd expect to see a little bit more Hobbs on the interior. But he gets a big contract, goes to a great spot, familiar with Rich Bisaccia. Like, I think this is a perfect fit for him. And he also, again, gets that big contract. So he's in a great spot. And then what did Keyshawn Nixon say, you know, at the end of the season? He said he wanted to work his way into cornerback one. He wanted to be CB1 for this team. Well, if Jair's not back, he's basically CB1, Keyshawn Nixon. And I think he's done a pretty good job of earning, you know, overall these opportunities. Now, whether or not you can make the most of them, I've said before and I'll say it again, I'm not betting against Keyshawn Nixon. He's a massively talented player, and he continues to find ways to succeed no matter what obstacle you put in front of him. So if he says he's going to go out and be corner one, I kind of believe him. Let's see what he can do with it. You know, if Jair's back, I think that's only a positive. I think it gives you more depth, versatility, and just options. But if he is gone, Keyshawn Nixon's earned his way into that number one role. Hobbs will get a ton of playing time. And I think for both of those guys, with the positions that they're in, they're both in great positions defensively. This offseason has to be considered a win as of now for both of those players. So in totality, TJ Slayton is an honorable mention, but Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love, Aaron Banks, Chris Brooks, Emmanuel Wilson, Ben Sims, John Fitzpatrick, those are the offensive ones. Rich Bisaccia on teams, and then LVN, Devontae Wyatt, Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden, Isaiah McDuffie, Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, Micah Robinson, and Keyshawn Nixon and Nate Hobbs, the winners on the defensive side of the ball. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you as always for joining me. Again, check out the audio version of the podcast. Make sure you're checking out the Pack-A-Day radio show, 9 a.m. on The Fan in Milwaukee. If you're not checking out that yet, you definitely should be doing so. I've got the Bleach Report chats from 3 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday. It's another way to get more content. And if you want to ask questions, it's an open Q&A as well. So lots going on. Happy hour on Friday, 3 p.m. Central Time. Hope to see you guys there. Open to everybody. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelsinkel, Jen Wright, Ian Hewell, and Matt Geiger. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.